quick heads up before we get into this episode. My mic was in a terrible place, totally my fault. It's bad for about 15 minutes, but if you just bear with me, it gets a lot better. Thanks for your patience. All right, this is episode 43 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. That's Kelly Gallup.
Welcome back.
We just did the Wretched Mess Festival in West Yellowstone last week. Super cool, fun, kind of cool to do this in front of a, cool to do it in front of a live audience. I was nervous. No one was going to show up. It was just going to be you and I talking in a corner. That would have been a huge ego blow. But we had a nice little crowd. It was fun.
Oh, by the way, on the Jason sent me a long text from the Pentagon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I got a full invite.
Oh, cool.
Tour of the Pentagon, no everything way. Else out there, and fishing cabin.
No way.
I'm like, bring it. And a little Jay and Pine and Kettle. But yeah, very. That was really cool.
Yeah, Bob Davis walked in today and said, you know, he said thanks for shouting out the Pentagon boys. And apparently they were hooting and hollering. When,
cool. When, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was the highlight of it for me. But, you know, really what I liked about it was that the fact that, I don't remember who I was talking to yesterday, but no, it was this morning at the shop in Ennis. We were talking about how in the, I don't know if the 70s so much, but in the 80s and some of the night, that was like, the FFF used to have their national there.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was annually or I'd been doing it a couple of times up there. It was like the place to be.
West.
Right? West Yellowstone was really the place to be. And then it kind of sunk into a, I don't know, it just kind of, everything fell off the, and it was so cool to have it centralized, you know, Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, you get this thing, and it was a, I'm pretty sure it was annual, at least for a while, and it was like the epicenter of fly fishing,
right.
And to see the boys bring that back, because the first show was pretty shitty. I mean, what did we have? Two people at the dying thing at one point?
Was that
zero?
Last year. Yeah.
And this year, there was a hum. It was like,
people were excited about it.
Yeah, there was a lot of
music.
People
was great.
Yeah, it was like, and I don't know, it just had a whole new vibe. It was, and to think that that could keep going and go back to, I mean, it was, you know, I've said it before, I got to sit at a table one time with, I mean, just the who's who of fly fishing. Yeah. And, you know, you're walking around and there's Lee Wolf. Are you shitting me?
That's pretty
You're
cool.
just like, yeah. It's like, and then you sit at a table with these guys. I mean, they're lefty and all these, every swinging dick in the world is there, right? And it was like, holy shit. You know, and he walked in as a kid, you know, I'm your age and I'm just, wow.
Wide-eyed.
How cool does it get? You know, and you're, and there's just every legend. I mean, Renee and Lawson and Jacqueline, I mean, there's just, it's like very cool. Just to think that that could come back and what it does for the region's great too. I mean,
totally.
Yeah. It was, I just think it's a
great, I thought it was really cool. It's like,
kind and they really pulled it off this time too. Well,
that's the first like real fishing festival I've been to. And I thought it was great. It was cool. It was really cool. It was watching Bob Jacqueline compete in the casting competition on the Bob Jacqueline casting pond. That's pretty cool.
What do you rock? I mean, I don't know how good he's doing now, but
I mean,
he's having some hand problems.
I know he's having some problems, and he's obviously getting up there in age, but like, he chucked it out there pretty good.
I'm sure. I mean, I used to watch him routine. I fished with him one time up on some ponds. I'm on one side, and he's on the other. That's 10, 15 years ago. And he walks down, and I'm on this side, right? And he's on a point, and I'm kind of on the outside. And it's 100 foot, and the fly hits on my bank, and I'm like, and he did it in two falls. He just came out, and he's got this absolute perfect loop. And he starts stripping. He's not looking at me at all, so I had to get out of sight so I couldn't see me cast.
That's funny.
It was, but I mean, yeah. And Bob was there. I mean, back there was just something. There's something changed in West when all that stuff went away.
Do you think it has something to do with the popularity of the park and that it's become more
touristy? No, because it went away before that.
It did,
It just, I don't, the park was, the park has, since before statehood, the park's been the park. Right. It's always been you, and everybody wants to go there. And so, yeah, it's been, we have a trespasser. Oh, it's Johnny Beaver.
But hi, Johnny Beaver. All,
he missed the trip lines up too for the phone. He didn't go through it. But yeah, it was always that way. It was back then. Mm-hmm. There was just a time, I don't know why or what happened. I do know like FFF started, and I don't remember if it was always there, but I know they started doing different local, like it's this weekend, or last, this weekend or last week, it's in Grand Rapids, Michigan, right? Cool. And yeah. So it started traveling, maybe that's what happened, I don't know. But there was TU stuff there too, and I don't know, just be cool to see it come back, because it's what a great, I mean, you can't find better fishing. The number of people from Europe that show up for that.
It's insane. Yeah. Crazy. No, and I mean, it's really, it. You know, we talk about Ennis being fish town, like the location of West Yellowstone, one could argue it is the mecca of trout fishing in the world.
I don't think you'd have to argue it.
It's, yeah. The when proximity to...
Actually, I've got a European fly fishing and tying, the magazine I subscribe or used to, and I was just looking at it at lunch, and it's the... quote is the mecca of fly fishing.
Yeah,
they're writing about, you know, fishing the park, and here they do this big circle all around. And
I mean, you draw a 4-hour driving radius around West Yellowstone, and it's pretty hard to beat.
Three states, yeah. You know. It, yeah. So, but it was a blast. It was, hopefully we can keep it going. And
yeah,
well, but it was, I would say it was three times as many as the first. Yeah, you know.
Well, it's good growth.
Yeah, let it happen.
And thanks again to Joe Moore and Big Sky Anglers putting that on. I know that's a hell of a lot of effort for them, and I thought they just did a great job. It's really cool. All right, I want to jump into a comment. It's not really a discussion comment, just one that made me chuckle. This guy commented, I don't even know if I'll say his name, he commented on the live from the Wretched Mess episode that just went out for us, let's see, that was yesterday. It says, it's kind of boring, you guys sitting around with your lady legs crossed and gabbing away. And one of our big commenters, Into the Blue, says, what do you think a podcast is exactly? I like that. So,
thanks. Hey, Mel thought my legs looked really hot.
There you go. I don't know. I just, you know. I don't know. Never mind.
Yeah, but
I'll back out of that one.
Well, yeah. What do you think it is?
I don't know.
I guess we should have had a desk up. We should have sat behind. We'd have to sit too close.
I know. I didn't like that, and blame me. I positioned all the stuff out there.
Mel's favorite thing of that was Clued and his waders.
Yes. Yeah, Clued.
And my hot legs.
Clued. If any of you have had the pleasure to run into Clued. You may know him as the man who, like, you're walking up to a fishing hole and you don't think you see anyone there, and all of a sudden you see a rod leaning up against a tree, and then you just about step on a man who's taking a nap in the bushes. That's probably Clued. He'll never hear you coming out here. Great dude. If you've had the pleasure
he made
running.
I don't know if everybody heard it in the podcast, but he made a comment about me saying you should, a righteous death would be by a bear attack or something. But he says something about a youthful He wants a youthful death.
Yeah.
He's 82 and a half, comes out for 3 months by himself, fishes every day.
Every single day.
And just goes, I'm like, what would you know about a youthful death?
He's 82 and a half, he's getting into steelheading.
Yeah.
You learned to throw a spay rod last year.
No, he's
if you think you can't learn new stuff, just go do it.
A machine.
He's awesome. He's the best. He's so funny too. He comes in here. He is the world's cheapest man.
Oh yeah.
He isn't actually, but I think he likes
to play that game.
Yeah, he likes to play the game. So he bought some high and dry the other day. He hands Kyler a 20 and Kyler hands him back a 5. He goes, $15? What? Since when? For me?
Ever.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Clued does everything wrong in the world. He knows I'm a health nut, and I went over and he's having lunch, but it's really breakfast. And he's having eggs and bacon and blah, blah. And he's got to have a smoke going. He doesn't smoke a lot, but he smokes, right? Yeah. And, you know, anybody over 65, no matter what they do, and they're still good, I would never count, wouldn't anyway, right? It's not my business. He goes, I bet you're not happy about all this. I go, I looked down, looked at the smoke, looked at his meal, looked at him, said, dude, I'm thinking about taking up smoking bacon and eggs at 82. If I can do what you're doing, are you shitting me?
Whatever you're doing's working.
I said, yeah, it's a, whatever it is, stick with it.
Oh God, that's funny.
Yeah, like, all you want to do is start being a granola boy like me, tip over dead the next day, and then haunt me.
Right. All he does, every time he goes to West Yellowstone, which is a lot, he loves fish in the park. He gets ice cream. He goes to that Häagen-Dazs there. And so, of course, I see him at the Wretched Mess Festival. I go, you got your ice cream already? He goes, this is number one. I'll have number two in about a half hour. Whatever works for you.
Yeah, whatever works.
All right. I wanted to start with a question from the one and only Bucky McCormick. We've talked about Bucky a lot. And Bucky's just a great dude. I started going to that shop a lot more.
The infamous cup I thought that guy stole in the last one we were talking about. And I forgot when I was talking about it, we won't be able to see it, but he also had a traditional wet. Because when I was in the podcast, I said, I was thinking about these when I was talking more flimpy.
Yeah.
And I forgot that nobody can see this, but I mean.
It's a lucky Bucky.
Right. And that he did have an actual.
Actual
so I stand corrected because I said, well, I wouldn't consider. I said Bucky's flies. I meant one. And I actually kind of went over that and missed it was in there because I went right to the Lucky Bucky's.
Right.
I got to catch myself. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm sure there's nothing that I could teach Bucky about wet flies. That's for sure.
He's pretty damn good at the thing. So
he's a PA guy, I think. I mean, that's any of those cats are so fishy.
Yeah, he's just the nicest dude. But I chatted with him for about an hour the other day, walked outside to go out to my car, and he pops out and he goes, hey, by the way, you know, he listens to the podcast pretty religiously, I think. And he says, by the way, I got a question that I think one of his clients asked him and he thought it might be interesting to hear about. And so what I'll do is I'll ask the question. I want to hear your take on it. It's not really relevant to me. But then I'll sort of follow up with what Bucky's opinion was on it. So. He wanted to hear what you thought the biggest changes in the fly fishing industry have been kind of since you entered it.
Well, we were doing it was since I entered it. That's a while ago. I started when I was very young. Yeah.
And I guess let me rephrase that. The biggest changes, I guess, maybe some for the positive, some negatives. Like, what do you think?
Well, even to being a grumpy old bastard, I see very little negative. I mean, it's not healthy to, you can find negative in anything you want. Look around what happened today. There's a million things happened, just awful. I mean, but the thing when you hear negative, it's always too many damn people. Well, you're one of the damn people, you know? So get off your ass and go and find more water. But in the realm, I would say, biggest, you know, then is it we talking fly tying? Are we talking rods, reels? I think probably the biggest thing, which I'm part of the problem there too, but social media and the ability for, with my generation, when you were 14, 15, 16, 18, you're some punk kid and people didn't share as much back then. You had articles and stuff like that. And I think, one of the biggest things that ever happened in our industry was VHS and, you know, Scientific Anglers did that video set series. I mean, revolutionized steelhead fishing, just absolutely blew it out of the water. Lots of dollars,
tree stuff. Yeah.
So
cool. Go watch it if you haven't seen it. It's on Scientific Anglers YouTube channel. It's just.
And then they also did one with Billy Pate on tarpon, a three set series, which. I sold so many of those in my store in Traverse City, and I didn't know anybody that fished tarpon. It was just fun to watch Billy Pate. Cool. He's just so funny. But that began an era of being able to see, and you know, before that you had Wide World of Sports and to a lesser degree, ESPN had a little bit of stuff. But
back when they actually showed sports instead of just guys arguing about.
Yeah. And so things changed and you saw a little bit of an influence of travel became really big. And so people started traveling all over to fish destination stuff, in particular the West. Mm-hmm. And so as far as, and then it would be in the 70s when Swisher and Richards and Selective Trout, that began a whole movement of fly design. And that's what I think was the biggest. Is it started with the no hackles, and then they just had all these great tires showing up all over the place, right? And there was just a movement of people. You would come to the, and in particular, West Yellowstone, we were just talking about. You know, you had Matthews in there and Bud Lilly's and Jacklin's and Madison River Fishing Company. And it was kind of like this place, in particular, Craig, Blue Ribbon, great Bucky, John, you know, Rowan, all these superstars as they're coming through, right? And they're just fly development's just, it's happening very quickly. And people are thinking outside the box, and they're thinking different ways to do things. And it just kind of all went to me was the fly started it, and then technique started rolling a little different. Not a lot. It's kind of like, was it Josh had asked about the upstream?
Yeah, Josh Hampton. Yep.
You know, that's always been around, and there's always been stuff like that. But it was the fly design and the emphasis on all the flies, because it's not just the damn fly. It's when somebody says, well, I'm running this in the film, or I'm running it, you know, as an emerger. That word didn't exist so long ago. Mm-hmm. And so now you've got people following entomology and why the bugs are going from one spot to another. And then you got your Buckies and your Matthews and the guys that are, and, you know, guys further west, you know, Hughes, all those guys. And they were bringing us into another realm of either, you know, straight up dead drift dry fly, or, you know, plunk down a nymph and or a wet fly. And so you're getting this, everything kind of happened at once. It was just all, and then of course the rod design or the rod start, Sage in particular comes in, and they've got rods for purposes. It was just things where, you know, the LL series, a light line dry fly series comes out, and it was just, wow, here things are happening. And for the most part, it was, you know, magazine stuff. You're reading that. And so, you know, predominantly fly fishermen. And so you've got, and then you were getting a few new people coming into that, and it wasn't quite the same. I can't really pinpoint one thing where I'd say, okay, this was it. But it was, and there was a different world then. I mean, when I was a kid, to think somebody, I remember when Doc Spencer went to someplace exotic to fish, and it was like, holy shit, this guy went. Well, hell, now kids your age come in, and they've been around the world 3-4 times.
Yep.
I mean, you know, a lot of the guys have guided. By the time people are 25 now, especially in the industry, there's a lot of guys who fished in, you know, are guided 3-4 continents and done every exotic. And
think about the guys we were down in Chile with, our guides down there, like Sawyer and Miles. And
yeah,
I mean, Miles is the oldest one of that crew at like early 30s.
Yeah, and the rest of those here for they've all been guiding here since they were 18 years old.
They guide in Alaska, they guide in Chile.
Yeah, it used to be like your big quantum leap was you went to Alaska, right? And so, okay, great. And then, but then New Zealand shows on, and then, you know, you start seeing, and then not to mention all the tropical shit, which was really spurred by Billy Pate's stuff. Mm-hmm. That's like, wow, that's pushing the, you know, weird here. And then Frontier shows up later, Yellow Dog. These people are just so locking in, but the travel was part of it. But in the industry proper, cause they kind of more troutish, the fly, the people. When I was a kid, you know, I remember going to tying things when we used to have them. Chet and I would go, McLaughlin and I would go to tying nights at elementary school. You know, I've talked about it before where they all smoked. They all smoked the same pipe. You're in the cafeteria. Of course, the ladies that served your meals all smoked too, I think, probably while they were serving. Hey, what do you want? But it was an old guy group.
Yeah.
And man, Chet and I show up, and we're 14, 15, 16, I don't remember how old we were. And you're just like, who's the kid? And you know, you're trying to learn. And Chet was always a really good tire. And you're trying to learn and you're not really getting any info from these guys, right? And that's what's the difference now. I mean, you want to know something? How long does it take?
Right.
Bonk. You've got every top 20 tires in the world for any one fly, any material, anything you want to see, you can just see it, right? Yeah. And that's when I saw, I remember when the first time when we did COVID, and I'm getting 12-year-old, in particular, Gina, that Gina flies. She's been tying like 2 years and like as good as any guy that I know.
Yeah.
Right? She's just perfect. And all these, there's a bunch of kids. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, we thought we were pretty good, but we're talking about 10 flies.
Yeah.
And now they've got everything, right? Everything's out there.
All the knowledge. I think podcasts are a huge part of that. I mean, obviously we do one and hopefully folks learn from it. I mean, that's kind of our goal here. But
I think they are, but I don't think they're as critical as the, in particular, the fly tying videos.
For sure. No, but just in terms of like transfer of knowledge, like Chris, you know, Chris has dove headfirst into steelheading. Mm-hmm. The guys listen to, I mean, dozens, if not more podcasts on steelheading. And like, mm-hmm. I haven't listened to any of them and we're just, you know, BSing at night. And I'm like, what do you think of this? He goes, well, actually, I know, you know, I've got an expert who said this on this show, you should listen to it. And I should, but.
And that's part of it. But that's now as the industry goes, though, you really got to go back into the, I would say you'd have to go to the late 70s to see mass change.
Yeah.
That was when it all, and as far, I really can't think of something that was negative. The only thing that's negative is, you know, when you're talking about, especially in the East, so many people, right? You got just too many rats in a cage.
Yeah.
Well, it got to end up somewhere. And so everybody's pissed off that somebody, and I've never been anywhere. Somebody says, well, when I bought this place, every single person that stayed here says, well, I've been here for 20 years. Yeah, me too. I just didn't own it. And so, you know, it was like everybody's got the same thing. They're all pissed off that they've been sitting on the same log for 25 years or 50 years or whatever. Now there's some kid there. Mm-hmm. God help you. He's a Euro nympher and he's catching too many fish.
Cool,
and they're all pissed off, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Clued. And, and it's like, yeah, well, times change. Keep up or watch or go somewhere else.
Evolve, you know?
But
die.
I'll be interested to see what Bucky said. And in fly tying, it would be thread. And everything else, it would simply be materials.
Yeah.
In the tying world, there's just the amount that's out there. Mm-hmm. Staggering.
I mean, for anybody who's been in either of our fly shops.
Yeah. And just wait.
Yeah. There's getting more.
But I'm curious, what did Bucky?
Okay, so Bucky said. He said the best change that he's seen since kind of he's been in the fishing world has been the quality of the gear. He's talking rotors, you know, underlayers. Like he mentioned waffle.
Underwear?
Yeah, cotton.
Cotton. Whatever.
Yeah, and so he said, you know.
Cotton actually, like, with wool over top of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Wool, not. Yeah. Nothing that moves.
Gore-Tex, all this
wool
stuff.
Wool is this thick and they're your hunting pants and they. If you ever did fall in, you would never get out. It's not going to happen.
Add a couple pounds.
I would agree with you on waders. That's one that I think about a lot in the respect that if you go back to the 80s and even into the 90s, we all wore neoprene.
Yeah.
And I've got hundreds of pictures of Jerry and I and buddies on the Bighorn, and it's 100 degrees, and we've got neoprene waders on. That's what we had.
What like,
and they're all 3 mil.
Yeah, 3 mil.
3 mil. Yeah. But they had, can't remember what company it was, Streamline maybe, had a waist high. I mean, you've been on the big one. It's, that water's cold, right? And so.
It is.
You would wear waders. We wore waders, or you just roll them down. But that was still just like a absolute movement. You went out of.
Monumental.
You went
shift.
From canvas. And then there was this little air of was vinyl. God, those were awful. And then you had a thing called Seal Dry, which literally a freaking condom. That son of a bitch was just dark brown rubber. I mean, dude, you want to talk about a grape smuggler? You got those son of a bitches on. Everything you own showing underneath it. Oh, you are on God. A giant rubber, and they're called seal dries. And it was just a, and if you snagged something with a, like you walked past a stick and you hit it and that stretched, it would blow up like, whoa, there'd be a 16 inch gash in both directions and it's gone, right? There, it was the worst waiter in the history of the world. Be great. Would have been a great, I don't know what it would be good for. Maybe walking through toxic waste or something, but
something
absolute. Awful thing. The waiter, so, and then that was back. I don't remember when Gore-Tex showed up, but that was a game changer for sure. And then the clothes, you know, that's a, kind of the beginning of Patagonia and the whole three base layers and all that shit with the Capeline and everything. Everything started changing. Just, you know, the SST, I would argue one of the biggest advancements in history of fly fishing was the SST jacket. It was a wading jacket.
Yeah.
Short, big pockets.
Who made it?
Patagonia.
Patagonia, yeah.
And then Sims knocked it off and somebody else did too. But right. I mean, if you go back into the 80s, whenever that was, I don't, might even early 90s, I don't database that shit well, but somewhere in there, if you went to a river, there was a point when you looked down that river on the, I remember being on the PM one day and I can see like 25 guys. Every one of them's got the same freaking jacket on. I mean, every single one of them. And it was a $200 jacket back then.
Yeah.
That's a lot of dig back then.
Yeah.
And it was like, everybody's got it. And that's when you started seeing the lifestyle come along. So the equipment changes it. But the lifestyle comes, and you're going to be in that Patagonia.
And what do you mean when you said the lifestyle comes along?
Like, well, before that,
it being a cool thing that that people want to be,
and it was
they
a
want
function
their photo
thing.
Taken in this.
Well, and it was functional. It was like, shit, we've got a jacket that actually doesn't hang down to the middle of your legs while you're wading, and filling your pockets full of shit, and you know it was actually cut short. And it had functional pockets. You get your hands into it. It had a big hood that came up and did. It did what it was supposed to.
That's actually, to this day, that's what I want in a fishing jacket. They look dorky as hell. I want it short.
They don't look dorky as hell. They look like a goddamn fishing jacket. It's the new one. Goddamn look.
I think maybe it's because I come from the ski world that, you know, I never wore like the quad XL shirts like Jeremy did.
I'm glad to hear that.
I'd only go double XL.
Yeah.
No, my parents wouldn't let me wear oversized clothing.
Good for them. One of the reason I like them. And they're hot.
Watch it. God, yeah. I knew it was
that
coming.
Get away from that, didn't you?
Should never have said it. All right. We'll change the subject. Let's go back to Bucky.
The rods and reels. Did he go into that part?
No, so the other, he said the negative thing he's seen is the etiquette. He thinks
that's just too many rats in the cage.
That's what I think. I think it's just increased people.
And we talked about that with Howard,
yep.
You know, about when he went in on the queen and or when that guy did walked in on and high holed her. And
you're talking about his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lucy.
Lucy.
Yeah.
The queen.
The queen.
And so I you know, I don't think that's ever not always existed. I think there's always been it. I mean, I grew up. When I started fishing the Pier Marquette, I never saw a person, right? Ever. And I asked my dad about it one time when I was fishing with him, and he goes, this is how it was in the 40s. We saw like two guys all day. He goes, yeah, that's how it was back then too. It's not, I said, well, that's not how it is. This is summer. Yeah. You come here in the spring or fall, and
maybe
there's going to be 100 boats on this piece of shit. I mean, you want to talk poor etiquette, but it's not geographic. It's just too many rats. I mean, things go bad. People are desperate. It's just like, they're not desperate like they're going to starve to death. They're desperate they got to catch a fish so they can get their fucking picture. And so it just brings out, it's the reason I haven't fished, you know, the Madison in 13 years in the park.
Yep.
And I don't want to be a dick. I'm not going to get a fight anymore over a fucking fishing hole.
So
I mean, there were those days where it's like, this seems to be your turf.
Right.
And it's like some guy comes in and I'm more like, hey, how you doing? I'm going to ask him, watch him fish. Hey, you know, help you out here. And it's just not what I want to, I don't want to go fight everybody on the river. And so I quit fishing there.
Yeah.
And then I went other places and lo and behold, you know what? There's rivers within 50 miles of here that don't have people on them.
Plenty.
And it's like, okay, well, that sucks for me. But sometimes you find your next favorite because you got your ass pushed off.
Exactly.
Which isn't, but if you're back, you know, I think so much of this comes from the East because there's so many anglers. And it's not that they're dicks. There's just so many.
They can't distribute any more than 15 feet apart.
If you've never been to the Oak Orchard in the fall when the browns move into that river and you get to the archery area there, the archery club, and you see on both sides of the river, a river that's not, I mean, you could roll cast across this thing.
Yeah.
And there's, and you see, you bastard, he's been bombing my tower.
There's a lot of flies today.
I know. But anyway, he, you get there, and I swear to God, I shot a video there once when we had Flyfish TV. Not a video, we shot a TV show. And I'm pretty sure it just so reminded me of a, it was almost fake, because there's guys on both sides of the river. One guy casts, this guy casts behind, this guy casts here. It was such synchronized fishing.
It's like windshield wipers doing this.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, it's synchronized. And you get in there, and they're all having a good time.
Yeah.
And people aren't assholes. They weren't.
Yeah.
They're just like, this is how we got to fish, because we got no place else.
Right.
You know, I got there, and I looked around, oh, this is going to be a 10-minute fight. We're going to, for sure, the sun's going to break out in no time. We got to. It was like, I've never seen anything like it. Nobody was even upset. Mm-hmm. It's just what you're, everybody, maybe everybody'd wish every, you know, I'm sure everyone in there was saying, man, I wish something would happen and everybody die except me. And just for an hour and right. Then come back to life or something, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, oh, it would be great to have this river to yourself. But, you know, I've been in so many of the areas out east, the Pierre Marquette, the, you know, shit, below Tippy Dam in the old days. You need a shoe spoon to wedge your ass in there.
Yeah.
Everybody, it's just, everybody's got the same agenda, though. And so every, you know, it's my definition of an asshole. Everybody's not in my boat.
So it's like, so true. So
what do you do? Yeah. Etiquette. And how did, we've been talking etiquette for 40 freaking years. And then the person who's yelling the loudest is the guy that high holes me.
Right.
It's always the same. Somebody, nothing's ever going to change.
I won't share who it was, but somebody who knows Bucky said to me today, God, I wish I didn't know Bucky so well, because he's exactly the kind of guy you can just high hole.
Yeah.
Way too nice to say anything. And I'm like, well, that's kind of an interesting thing to say, but I guess I get the point. Bucky is the best guy in the world. But
if you think of the three of the, in my estimation, three of the best guys that ever came out of this region, all three of them worked there, Rowan, John, and Bucky.
John Jurasek, yeah. Rowan Nyman, and yeah. Bucky McCormick. Yeah.
All three of them great worked dudes. At a Craig's place.
Yeah, John
Craig,
was just helping
Craig
me with
the
my,
same way. He isn't going to say a freaking word.
No.
You know what? It's not important. Well, first of all, collectively, the son of a bitch has caught more fish in most of the United States. Yeah. They don't need another fish. No. You don't get better than any one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk fly tying? Oh, Jesus. I mean, I would never sit in the same room and tie with any one of them. No. It'd be so embarrassing. They're so good. And then, I mean, one of them, John in particular, cast-wise, fish-wise, regardless, they're so good they don't have to. Nor do they, and they usually beat you there anyway. Because yeah. they're going to go hit.
They get it. They know it.
They don't have to do it. But
so John was up at the casting pond. He's kind of running the casting show up at West Yellowstone mm-hmm. and at the fishing festival. And the rumor that somebody told me who actually watched it, so I don't know if it's much of a rumor, but in practice the day before, I think it's Brian Gregson was telling me this, that John is talking to him, trying to show him some form, and just lets one go 135 feet, which would have beat everyone else.
It would not surprise me.
Then. He's also telling a story about John, how somebody was telling me a story about them and John went out fishing together, and you know, they're kind of walking up to the river and John just puts his arm out and says, hold there. Sees a fish rising, just undoes his fly, puts it right in front of it, catches the fish, and then they just keep walking. Just says
nothing, just could, nothing you could tell about those guys yeah. that surprise
no. But John is the man. He really helped me out with my stuff.
And yeah. if you think about it, maybe it's, I don't know. They're so, once you get to that level, I mean, or like Mickey too, like those guys in the park, right? When you've been and had it for 45 years and you've seen it from the bottom, you know, when there was nobody, there was never nobody here. It's always been a popular destination. But when there's two or three people in a run, it's much easier. And there's a run below and above, it's much easier. When there's 30 people do,
then it's crowded. It
becomes necessity to start wedging your way around, yeah. I guess, or leave. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't, and neither would anybody else that's, but there's a certain comfort zone to have caught enough fish that you don't, like, nothing is worth it to go in and be a dick. And God help you. What if you did walk in on Bucky and you're a dick to him? He's not going to be a dick back. He's going to go, go ahead, fish it. He ain't going to forget you.
So exactly. I was almost embarrassed with my own actions up in the park the other day. Well, one, I woke up at 4. I set my alarm for 5:30. I was too excited to go fish, so I like ran up there and, of course, walked in from a little parking lot in the scariest, darkest, densest.
There's nothing in the park that's not scary in the dark.
So scary. I was so scared. My headlight is running out of battery, so it's basically, I mean, it's basically useless. I might as well have used a spoon and tried to angle it with the moon to try to get some light in front of me. But, and of course, I get into this run 45 minutes before first light. I'm just sitting on the bank. It's 34 degrees. I'm freezing my ass off. It was a bad morning. Of course, I didn't touch a fish. So then I actually run into the park, which was a horrible decision because I'm going through the gate at 8:15.
Oh, perfect. Going to Barnes Pools?
Every other person.
Nobody there.
Yeah, no, I run into Barnes and there's three guys standing in the middle of the fish in Barnes 1, which, I actually talked to I think he's a warden in the park who snorkels Barnes. And he goes in there and he's telling me, I can't remember his name. He's a great guy, but he's telling me that he'll go in there and check licenses, right? Which they do all over the place. And whenever he sees nymphers standing in the middle, he'll pull out a video that he took snorkeling and say, look, you have walked well past the fish. There's never any fish on the far side. They're all on the close side. Don't get in the water.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay, I'm back at it. Those fish are gone. But so long story short, I jump, a short story long, really. I jump up to the next run above it. Nobody's up there. I'm swinging down. Then a guy kind of walks past me to go up and start at the top. That's all cool. No problem with that. I'm working my way down. Got to share the water, right? And then a guy, a nympher, he sees me standing there. And he's kind of walking upstream, sees me. Turns around. Yeah, I'm swinging. Mm-hmm. Didn't wait long enough to see what I was doing. Then he kind of like starts walking down to the river and I just start seeing red. And I'm like, this motherfucker's going to low hole me. The most aggressive. I mean, I'm going to be putting 20 feet of running line past his feet is where I'm fishing. I'm below him already. And right before he gets in the water, he looks up, watches me bomb the cast and goes, does one of those, gets out of the river and goes up above me and low holes the next guy. But, but I, you know, he walked past me and I knew, I mean, whatever, I'm low on blood sugar and food.
So he was really cool.
Yeah. He was friendly. And I immediately assumed the worst that he's going to be an asshole. And then,
fish in there a lot, that's usually you're about 99% chance that you're going to be right about, you're going to get low hold.
Yes. So, but I just, at that point, there are too many people in there for me, too many rats in the cage, as you said. So I just jumped my car and went to McDonald's.
Yeah. Or run up higher. There's a lot of water other than that mile and a half of water we have. Yeah.
I just wanted to see if Jeff was in there. I wanted to bullshit with him.
Who?
Jeff.
Oh.
Yeah. The guy who tied next to Kyler, you know, Jeff. Apparently he's a listener to the podcast too. He said, thanks for the shout out, except for when you told people what car I drive.
I did.
No, I
did. You did.
I did. Sorry, Jeff. So yeah, I think we kind of wore that one out, right?
I don't know. Probably. I was kind of wondering if we were going to go equipment type stuff, but, it's all part and parcel.
Yeah. And I haven't been in this world long enough to even have an idea.
And I truly believe there's about six, eight people that really, they don't even know it. And they revolutionized us. They that group. And, you know, there's just a handful of people that were so innovative, and in the same in the steelhead world. And they were so innovative, and it was, things happened slower, but it built quickly.
Yeah.
It happened slower because it was magazine, and it built so quickly, and it just, there was just a tsunami behind it. Mm-hmm. That was so, and I don't, like Rowan never talks, you've never heard Jerzak talk about anything. None of them collectively, if you got them in a room, it would be deafeningly
silent.
It would be like silent beyond belief, you know, and they're, and there's a bunch of them, guys out there that just did really.
Their fingerprints are all over.
All over.
But you wouldn't necessarily know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool for me to go up there and kind of see all that, because I'm not very well versed in the who's who of fly fishing, but.
There's another guy that was real instrumental. Well, there's a bunch of them, like Hatches, Cucci Nastassi, and those guys, and he, you know, the Western Hatches, he was in, Stalkup, another great tire. But there's guy, like one thing that was really great for me, Ted Fasigula's pictures. He had books on mayflies. It was just starts with the selective trout and those guys, but they had some pictures that were moderate, and then Hatches had some, but then imagery was so coming on. Like, to write a book about bugs, come on, there was going to happen, right? And there's just a bunch of little things like that that just, but like I said, it all kind of followed that first start. It all started in the 70s with that selective trout thing.
Yeah.
And it just followed suit.
Wave.
Big wave.
All right, let's talk about something else. I mentioned Britt Hoberg on the podcast a couple episodes ago. He sent me a bunch of steelhead flies.
I got
two fish on his flies so far this year. I'm going back tomorrow, try to get some more. But Britt sent a bunch more flies, bunch of cool stuff. And then he sent Kelly a couple of...
Probably won't even go fish steelhead this year, but he sent me a lot more. I assume that's what
is. There's some.
I wasn't supposed to open this, so Braden made me like freaking Christmas morning. So, Kelly, I just started tying this style of flies and did not know if you would work or not, if they would work or not. So I decided not to send any to you the first time. So you got the crap, and then I got
Thanks,
the great stuff. I've included a few in this shipment. I have to let you know it's a little intimidating sending you a legend. That's a little too high cotton, and any type of flies. But this little window-licking crayon eater got enough courage to send you this one. So he sent me these things. Braden wouldn't let me play with the toys until we were live. But these are pretty badass. I could see them in the thing underneath the wrapping.
What's that little warning on the front say, too?
says... Warning, cancer and reproductive harm if you touch Kelly's bugs.
I like that.
Get this thing apart. Yeah. You're the golfer.
Give me the photo. You're badass.
So, yeah, I got the good stuff. I'd fish every one of these things. Very cool. Thanks, Britt. Don't worry. Braden will never touch them. But thank you.
Me, that's okay.
He can't catch a fish on his own flies. I might have to give him one.
Yeah, I know. I was telling the guy in the shop today, I caught two fish so far.
That Bucky, on that clear water, I'm struggling those reduced flies.
That lucky Bucky.
I'd be all over that thing.
Yeah. I just wonder if that hook's strong enough. Purple. I think it would be. I don't pull on fish too hard. I would assume that hook would be strong enough.
It's a steelhead hook.
That one is?
Huh? Oh, no, it isn't. It's a 200R. I wouldn't worry about it. Size fish you catch, you'd be fine.
That's ouch. Thanks, Britt.
Ouch.
That hurt.
Yeah.
Kind of stopped my mind. I can't really think.
That's good stuff.
I think Chuck was making fun of me. I told Kelly that I caught two fish so far, both on Britt's flies. And he goes, what about all those flies you were tying? Well, I fished them too. They just didn't get eaten.
You've got some good ones over there.
I'm going to touch a couple.
Steelhead. When they want to eat something, they'll eat.
Looking for a player, right? Looking for a player.
All right. This was a question. I need to do a little research and figure out who this question was from, because Johnny, it was sent to our slide in Instagram account, and then he forwarded it to me. So I'm sure I'll be able to find it somewhere. But it says, question for the podcast. I like to check out local fly shops when I travel, partly to talk shop and browse, but also to try and get some intel on the local fishery. I always like to buy something to support the shop in return for the info, but here's the catch. I'm not rich, and honestly, I'm kind of cheap. So here's the question. What are the best items to buy that offer the most support for the shop? Like, I always need tippet, floating, stuff like that, but I can't imagine the margins on those are great. I also tie my own flies, so dropping top dollar on a TJ hooker is hard to justify, unless it's an Amsterdam hooker or tied by King Gallup himself, but I digress. Would love to hear Kelly's take on this one. Thanks.
Well, first of all, the fly shop, it's nice, it's noble that you do that, but, and if you really want, I mean, a fly shop's profit margin is always t-shirts and hats.
That's exactly what Johnny said.
That's what you do, but you're going to spend, hats a ridiculous amount of money now. It's just absolutely stupid.
Yeah, there's a company called Melon that's making a basic ball cap like this. It's $85.
Yeah. All our hats.
I think our hats are $30 for the most part. Yeah, it's standard.
I remember when they were 12 and I thought it was high, but I also remember when the car was invented. So it was, it's very noble that you would do that, but I would also tell you, looking for, that is a fly shop's job. Information, and we've talked about this 100 times on this. Walking in and asking stuff, don't take up an hour of someone's time if you're not going to purchase something. You've got to do something in return. But if you're just coming in and you're a 5-minute conversation, 10-minute, depends on how busy it is and stuff. But nobody should expect, if you need something, come back and get it. You need some tippet, you need whatever. That's great. But, there's just this point. There's a point where it's like, okay, yeah, we've talked for 20 minutes and you're pulling out maps and doing shit like that. Maybe a hat's not such a bad deal.
So how about this? This is.
But there's no real rule. People here that are looking for information, and that's our job.
Yeah.
You hope that that is a returned favor. Yes. You just think, okay, you don't need it. I do it in particular with people from Pennsylvania.
How many people live in that state?
A lot. It's just that area.
There's hundreds of millions given on how many come into our fly shop.
But they're usually really well set, and they have lots of flies, and they're usually tires, and they're usually, and they always say the same thing. Well, my flies are from back east. I said, great, let's look at them. And we go through the box and say, you don't need anything. Just go fishing. And, where can I go? And you tell them this or that, and they do. But you send them on their way. And it's like, you will remember that we did that for you.
Yeah.
And if that's what you do, but I also get people that come in and you got maps for sale, and they'll take a picture of the map.
Right.
Well, the map was for sale, and then you spend 20 minutes marking spots and this and that, and they walk out. Well, that's kind of, you got to make that judgment.
You probably can't change that person.
No, you probably can't.
They probably don't understand.
No, and they probably don't think they're taking, but I also don't have a problem saying, listen, I know we're going to just sit here, but I got to help this guy out. We're drawing maps and we're doing things, and we've been in this for 20 minutes.
Somebody's waiting.
Somebody walks in and wants to, You have to put yourself in that person's shoes. And if that pisses you off and you know you're cheap and somebody says, well, you got to decide, what would you do if you were in that shoe? If you say you're kind of cheap, if there's a sticker, grab something.
Yeah.
But in reality, what you should do is go back to that shop as often as you can.
Right. Or when you're going to make a purchase,
try to support them. And I walk into shops all the time and ask them what's going on. Yeah. I'm not, Jesus, I've owned a fly shop since 79. I'm not buying anything.
Right.
And, I like to go down to Lawson's and buy it because it bugs them. I buy flies in there. I bought my own flies in there. Why do you buy these flies? They're different. No, they're not. No, but they're not in my bin. And I like to, and I buy stuff all the time. I don't buy hats and t-shirts because I don't
wear
hats.
Yeah.
And I do, but I wear whoever I work for, but I don't usually, I don't wear hats if I'm not filming. And so, but I look for something, you know, I try to do something, but just, you know, I get asked this, you know, I get told this, well, I got to buy something. Well, the second somebody says that, I say, no, you really don't.
No, you don't.
But you can come back and buy what you need. Don't buy, but I wouldn't go in and I'm not afraid to just limit your time. Just go in and ask questions, come back and say, I appreciate that. Even that, walking back in and saying, hey, I really appreciate that you know, steered me in the right place and it was great. Even a thank you.
It feels really good when you send someone out, they go catch fish in the spot you told them about, and then they come back in and say, hey, thanks a lot. Like that's, as a fly shop.
But you still think you're going to end up, you know, garnering something out of that equation because that's what you're here for. So, but it shouldn't be the primary emphasis of, you know, taking your money every time you walk in the shop. Mm-hmm. After a while, you walk in the shops, you guys want to just, you're just talking. You know, you're just, hey, what's up? I mean, geez, Jake, I don't know how he remembers everybody.
He remembers everybody. People he hasn't seen for years.
He had a guy come in there today, and he's like, hey, and the guy didn't even notice who Jake was. And he said, and finally, and they fished together 10 years ago.
Right.
And it was like, wow. Well, that's really cool though. But it's the fly shops should be, well, destination. It's, I guess they're a little different, but you know, don't walk in at this shop at 8:30 in the morning and there's 65 people in the shop and want to have a 25-minute conversation.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a time and a place.
You need to take, you know, you show up at 3 p.m. and there's 3 or 4 guys in here waiting for you to walk in. They want to talk.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they don't mind doing it, but just use a little common sense.
Definitely.
It'll go a long ways.
If you're bullshitting with Kelly and then a bunch of people walk in, just kind of pop off to the side, let them get in and out, and then you can.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. And
it's the same thing.
It's just common sense goes a long way. But I don't.
Hats, shirts, common. Tip it. Those are all great things. Like, you know, lower dollar items that you need.
Hats and t-shirts are a fly shop's profit zone.
Yeah.
And nowadays it's stickers.
Stickers.
And so, you know.
What I
don't walk in and ask 20 minutes worth of conversation, say, are your stickers free?
Yeah. How much are these?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I
did. I'm going to put it on my cooler.
I mean,
great.
Even if you're broke and cheap, which right here, I go up
cheap and, is a necessity.
Yes. When I probably be less broke if I was cheaper. I wouldn't. When I go up to Bucky's shop, you know,
it's not actually Bucky's
shop. No, I'm sorry. But when I go up to
Blue Ribbon,
I go up to see Bucky. When I go in there to see Bucky and, you know, we bullshit whatever, I always grab a couple flies and, you know, a thing, a tip. Yeah. And I look, like I work for a fly shop. I can get deals on this stuff. But it's a respect thing for his time. And I don't want to seem like I'm just monopolizing it. And I'd say like a general rule of thumb, which I just thought about, so I could be totally wrong on this. But, you know, for people that actually need hard and fast rules, make an estimation as to what that fly shop employee is being paid hourly. And then buy something that's worth the fraction of the hour. Right. You know, if you talk to him for a half hour,
we pay our guys,
we're supposed to, say just for round numbers, you know, we pay him $10 an hour. We don't, but Kelly pays him more than that. But, let's say it's $10 an hour and you spend a half hour with him, compensate him.
But if there's anybody out there
and Kelly,
to work
go spend
$10 an hour, give me a call.
Right. Right. So his time's $5. And then let's say, you know, because whatever.
This is way too complicated.
But for people who need rules,
yeah,
you know.
$5 or $10.
$5 or $10.
You'll be great.
Yeah.
You'll be great.
Yep. And if you, especially if you go in just to use the bathroom, go buy something.
That one.
Because we have to clean those toilets. Yeah. Well, I don't anymore. Sorry, Lou and Tyler.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a fair question though, because
I think so.
We do get asked that. And it's kind of, and it, not as common as in the old days used to be, are we supposed to tip the guide? Let's just get that out there and so you know. Yeah, that's not an option. And that was something that as an outfitter, I would always approach that to, you know. And if it's just a rule, it is. You think about it, you're with somebody 8 hours and they brought you your lunch. I used to always use that same equation. So I go to dinner and you got a $100 dinner and you're going to give a $30 tip. And you, I used to do this not to check on the waitress or the waiter, but I did a stopwatch on a really, on a $200 dinner, right? Take a guess how long the average is that they're at your table.
90 seconds.
Pretty close. Yeah. I think it was 63 was real in this low, quick area, like yeah. where it's just here and gone. Even if, but for me, it was like 3 minutes because I talk insatiably. I make
really?
It
to, no, I not make, you.
I love to
talk. I have never seen someone talk more to just strangers, I mean, waiters, waitresses, everything.
Well, we've, it should be fun for both of you, right?
Yeah.
And it should be, they should have a, I'm sure they get a lot of assholes.
Yeah.
And so you're making fun of them, having fun with each other. And it's like, this is fun. And then you give them a great tip.
My favorite right? one you do is when they walk up and before they can even say something, you go, what do you know? And they go, just yeah. dumbfounded. What do you know?
Conversation, have fun. Life yeah. should be fun. Everybody, you ever been in a city where you walk in and like, New York or whatever, some giant city where it's like everybody talks about how great the city is. Well, again, the fuckers look at you like...
It's Seattle. It's a thing. It's called the Seattle Freeze.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. So why am I in this shithole?
Right.
Why would you even go in if it wasn't fun?
Try that.
Fire those people and start, you know, start over. But anyway, in that... And then you think about the guide part, and I don't know why I digressed onto this shit, but a guide has you for 8 hours minimum. Like, it pick you up, drive you... You know, make sure you don't die in the boat. Change your
make bring, conversation with
brings
boring
your lunch,
ass.
Yeah, tries to teach, tries to do this, and then you come back and you give them $20. That ain't gonna happen. And I mean, 10 years ago, there was a saying: "If it ain't a bend, don't come again." Yeah. You know, so $100 is very. But remember, if you're even going with the 20% rule, your trip, and there's two of you in the boat usually.
Yeah.
So your tip commensurate to the 650 or whatever it is should tell you where you should be.
Yeah.
And if you can't afford that, you really should save, because we've all been there. I mean, when I was a kid and I would take a guide, I saved for my tip.
Yep.
I did. And when I couldn't, you couldn't afford it and it's killing you. Very few people that jump in our boats can't afford it. Right. And so, and it's, but that's a different world, but it's somewhat the same, because there's they're their time, and then you've got the shop person's time too, but there's a little difference in that one. The guide has your life in his hands for 8 hours a day, and he has, you know, and I have a hard time not tipping no matter what, but if it's a shit guide or a shit serve, whatever, you know, that there should be something in there too. I had a guy, I sent Herm Thomas, I think it was, to somebody on the Big Hole once. And he, I told this story, I think, on the podcast. Really, about 1 o'clock, Herm says, we're going to break for lunch? And he goes, what do you mean? And he goes, you brought lunch, right? He goes, well, I got a bag of bread under my seat and some peanut butter. And so Herm just sits there and he goes, what, you want me to make it for you? He got out and went fishing and left them there to make their own sandwiches, white bread and peanut butter. And it was probably Skippy, because I don't eat no Skippy. You're going to eat Jif. You're going to eat Jif. You're not, probably with Skippy, dude. I'm telling you. Gary is a Skippy eater.
Jerry's
a Skippy. Tell you everything.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
but
yeah. Sorry, Jerry.
Beat that one to death. Sorry.
Just one funny thing. I'm sure
I've never seen anybody that doesn't tip guides anymore.
It's really
5 years I've never. I don't think I've seen it yet.
I just remember a story from Jeremy where somebody after a trip, and I truly believe it's somebody that just wasn't really aware and like didn't think the tipping.
I'm pretty sure I know this story, yeah.
Well, they handed him a $20 bill and I think he did pocket it, but he was so livid. I think he said to someone, next time I get a tip like that, I'm going to hand it back and say, you need this more than I do.
Yeah, that there was.
And like, he, obviously he'd never do that, but I just like that line, maybe a chuckle.
Well, it's happened, but it's the one I'm thinking of might be the same guy, and he goes home and finds out and then sends him money and apologizes profusely because he had no idea.
Yeah.
And was thinking that might be a good tip. Right. But whoever, I know it was, I don't know. there's this rule in my life. Whenever I'm absolutely certain, I'm probably wrong. If you don't believe me, ask Mel or anybody else I've ever said. But when I, but someone did that and sent Jeremy, I think it was Jeremy,
yeah,
and a big apology letter.
Right.
Right. And we've had lots of them that call in and like, dude, you got to make this. You got to make this right.
Make this right.
Make it right. Tell him I forgot. Tell him anything, but I didn't know. I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, and then you got the Chuck Jeffries of the world, who I had to make tip less because he was creating, we're going to have a civil war within here.
For all the guys that wanted to be on his
trip.
Yeah,
he was tipping like the same amount as the trip.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Chuck, this is going to end. This is not going to happen. Really? Yeah, really, Chuck. You can't hit more than the tree.
He's so funny.
You want to see the power of command? See who started getting what trip in a row?
Yeah.
Have a $650 tip involved.
Him and Bill Devane came in here. They were fishing with Johnny the other day. They're just cracking me up. I mean, you know, Johnny goes, we're doing lions to Pal. And Bill goes, I don't want to fish that shit. Take me somewhere else. Everybody fishes there. And he goes, it's been bad everywhere. That's where we can get them. And Chuck's like, it's fine to me. And Bill goes, you just like that because your cell phone works in that section.
No shit.
And then
well, that's good if you're fishing with Chuck. He's on the phone half the time.
He's on the phone. And then Johnny goes,
he also is pretty lucky.
He goes, Billy Devane, you better have your best cast today. It's going to be blowing out there. He goes, I don't need my best cast. I've got a Hardy.
I like it.
Oh, he cracked us up. All right, this question from Scott Pennington. It sort of relates a little bit to what we were just talking about. He messaged me on Instagram, and I was very confused at his question, so I had to ask again and then kind of clarified it for me. But he says, I've had quite a few clients ask me to fish with them during our time on the water, but I respectfully pass so I can tend to their fishing abilities. But it's came up enough that it made me think, is it ruder to deny fishing with clients or fish alongside them while still tending to rod and rig? But I guess basic question would be fishing with clients. If they ask me join them, is it worse to join them or to respectfully deny and keep them fishing? That came in at 3:06 a.m., which he might be on the East Coast, so it might be the next morning.
There's ways. And I remember we used to test fly. Let me throw in there and make sure you got enough weight or whatever. Yeah. You always get the first cast fish, and it's really bad. You never, ever do it until I don't recall. I mean, I did thousands of trips. I don't know, but I mean, even with like Herm Thomas, Herman JC or Herman Herm or whoever it was, or I don't, even people like when Mark Macklin, Chris Gamble and I used to fish so much together, and I may have fished once, but these guys, I mean, these are people that I fish maybe 40 times a season.
Yeah.
Right. And so I just think it's really, I don't think it's your job. If I found out my guy fit, show me how to cast. How would you just go run the run for me? I want to see what you do, especially with steelheading. When we were, you go from the base, you know, slinky rigging, you know, snagging with the old school. And then we started doing more swing. And so when you start showing people how to set a run up and well, just run the run, I'd say, good, I will after you do.
Yeah.
And then, but you're going to run the run first, right? And we didn't have really giant runs back there. You know, I'm thinking like maybe if you, but a 200 foot run with standing, I mean, walk wading, and you know, would never do it in a boat, but like in the Big Manistee or the Muskegon or something, giant rivers, but most rivers smaller, you might get a 60 foot run.
Yeah.
Well, they can run it through and you can walk them through, right? But it seems like a great idea when they're asking you to. The high road is always to say no. And just, because what if you do get it, if you're trout fishing, what if you do pop a 22, 3, 4, and you say, well, then your ego could come in and say, well, they never would have got it. I've seen some crazy ass shit happen out there.
Yeah.
I mean, and they do get them and they do hook them. And that's a lifetimer for that person. And if in my guide staff, if I found out you were fishing, you'd probably be on a short road out of here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not your job. And it's, you know, but again, and even with people that you've had for some of my clients, I had 20 years. Mm-hmm. So if you counted Herm, if I still guided, it would be 40.
Yeah.
45 actually. And he's still coming out. He fished with Johnny, right? But it's just not really the guide's job. And I mean, it just isn't. And so I would say, as much as they beg, they won't be as happy if you pop that big fish out from under them.
Yes.
And it's not your job, truly. Your job is to be a good entertainer and a really good instructor. I mean, that's your job. And everybody's in a different river, everybody's in a different city. If I'm in some stock back east in a Stocker Popper River where it doesn't matter, I mean, I see there's a few outside of Atlanta that, I mean, technique may not be as critical as it is other places, but I just still don't think that's your job. I mean, from a 45-year guide person, I just think it's... You should, there's a better way to do it. I mean, one or two casts is one thing, but your job is to be by that person's side and make sure that they are doing everything right and they have the absolute best chance. And they sure as shit wouldn't. If you're a guide, I'm assuming you're a good angler. I mean,
one would hope. That. Yeah.
And so I would assume, not always, I mean, but I would assume that you are better than your client.
Yeah.
That isn't always the case because there's a lot of great anglers nowadays, and they just want someone to.
Like, for example, when Andrew had Howard Croston in his boat.
Yeah. Yeah. And if Andrew had Howard Croston in the boat and Howard asked him to fish and he said yes, he'd be the biggest idiot on earth because he's got the best angler in the world. I'd be watching that son of a bitch every second of my life.
Yes. Right. So to me, it sets up as a lose-lose scenario, right?
It is.
One of two things happen. You go in there, you catch a bunch of fish, and your client's like, huh. Makes them feel bad because they suck. Now they know that they suck, and they know that you caught those fish.
Wait a minute. They don't suck. You're a guide. You suck if you do not teach them. As a guide, that's when you watch these pieces of shit that are just rowing the boat. And one of the fireable offenses in the guide thing is if I only had talent in my boat,
yeah.
I'll fire you. You won't get the last word out. Your ass is out of my staff. Your job is to instruct, teach, and make them better every damn time you go fishing.
Right.
Not now and then, not because the fishing sucks. Get off your lazy ass and work harder.
Teach them something.
Every time.
That's a fair point. I think the other side of this is you get out there, you don't catch a fish.
Yeah.
And then they know you suck.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I would hope
it just sets up as a lose-lose. Like,
that's why you say, let me, you know, and you never do it. That was such an old steelhead trick and salmon trick that, you know, well, let me test. You come to a new run. Let me check something.
Yeah.
Well, the fish is going to eat on the first cast usually anyway. Where were we?
Well, I remember the first time I came to Montana, I hired a trout spay guide who I hope isn't a listener of the show, but. You know, I've been practicing my cast. I picked it up like a month before and I get it out there. It wasn't pretty, but like I had a couple moves and like I was fishing, right? It was out there. And I'm so excited to jump in the water. I met him real early. We go down to float and we pull the boat over this run and get out. And I like start undoing my rod. He goes, here, let me show you something. And I'm like, no, I want to show you that I think I know how to do this. I was all jacked up about it. I didn't know a single other person that spay fished, right? I'm finally like, I wanted to watch me and, you know, help me get better and everything. And he goes, all right, so what you're going to want to do is strips off a bunch of line, just like does a cast, gets a big rainbow. And then he hands me the rod. And I'm like,
yeah.
And then
never on the first run.
It was a bad day of fishing. And that's because you know, you can only do so much with a trout spay as a trout spay guide. You know,
yes.
He's not rowing the boat and putting me on the fish. He goes, they're here. See if you can get it out there.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, it was August, hot, whatever. Not his fault there.
Well, but like I said, that's why you need to make the first
cast. I don't think he's a full-time fishing guide. He's just a
Like, I know he's got his outfitter and everything. It was not illegal guiding, but I think he used to guide and just doesn't really anymore.
That's why you don't do it, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's case in point.
It's so Bush League. We used to make everybody knew about it. And sometimes I would do it messing with my clients.
Yeah.
You know, especially if we've had a great day or something. How hard is this? First run, you know it's going to happen, right? Especially when you're running that slinky shit and the lead and all that. But yeah, just not a good thing. Don't do it.
And then, you know, if you're doing overnight, multi-day trips, whatever.
No. You just don't fish. My first thing, my dad, I don't know if that's what you're going to say, but it felt like it was. The first thing when I did my first trip when I was 15 years old, and I didn't know, couldn't even drive, had to ride with the people. And I've told the story about guiding the kid that was 2 years younger than me. And we caught a shit ton of fish, 13, I believe. All little rookies and browns. Stayed in one spot. We were on the airport run on the Big Manistee. And the dad didn't catch any. But the dad wasn't being guided. The guide went down and fished in front of him, basically, which is different. But I went to ask my dad, who was started guiding a long time ago, 1940. And so I said, what do I do as a guide? He goes, it's simple. You don't get to fish. You just make that person teach them how to fish. Well, 15, I don't know if I knew how to fish, but I knew how to fish better than the 13-year-old, right? Yeah. I know if we threw the flies up there and they're all like little fish, they'd eat them. And we had a blast. We had like a two-hour trip, maybe. Maybe not even, maybe an hour and a half. But I says, what do you mean? And he had two things. He goes, well, make sure you make them a good lunch. They'll never forget a good lunch, but they can forget a bad day fishing. But they'll never forget a bad lunch.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And so, and he goes, and you don't get to fish. I says, well, don't, what? What do you mean? You know, he says, I don't get to fish in front. He goes, no, you don't even take a rod. If you take a rod, it's just a backup.
Yeah.
Set the precedent for the rest of my life. You didn't fish. That's just how it is. And then even, like I said, even with really great customers, it's just, like you said, you set yourself up for failure every single way there is.
Yeah.
So you just don't do it.
There's no win-win.
Done. There you got your answer.
All right, let's wrap up. Anything behind the desk you want to talk about?
Oh, I do. I have a book I want to talk about. Not that it's, this is just a, this, I don't really read this kind of book often, right? It's kind of a, like Jerry Dennis is a writer that I read, but I was in a lot of his books and he's a very good friend. But this is Dave Karczynski, I think. He's a Michigan cat. And I would not have read this book except for...
What's it called?
Huh? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, probably a good idea.
Calling After Water.
Dispatches from a Fishing Life. But Richie Strolis was in his newsletter said how he couldn't put this book down.
Yeah.
And I'm not a really, like, reading other people's story thing so much. I couldn't put the freaking book down.
Is that good, huh?
Yeah. And I was like, damn it. And he lives in Michigan, right? Mm-hmm. But he's not, very little is about Michigan.
Yeah.
It's about his life as a writer. And I just thought it was...
Well done.
I just thought it was a really... I couldn't put it. I lost a lot of sleep because I kept reading the damn book. And I'm like, okay, just one more story.
Yeah.
And so Richie was right. That was great. So it's not really something from behind the desk.
We can call it the desk today.
I don't know. I think I called out this last week, the Stockton one. But it was just kind of a cool thing because I really am. Maybe I've been missing a lot. I don't know. Maybe, but I just don't usually read that kind of book.
So I got a shout out. I think it's Bob Twombly.
Trombley. I do know Trombley, but
I'll probably have his last name wrong. But he was in here the other day, and you know, talking about how much he likes the podcast and everything, and said, "You guys need to review a book a week on the podcast." And I said,
"It's a good idea.
I'm not sure Kelly knows how to read." especially not a book a week. I sure shit can't do that. So
no, but I could go on old books.
Yeah,
and we could do that. It's like we got that Fran Betters book, and but it's we should.
I'll just spark
in the store. One of the things I'm going to do, because I've told this story a million times, how my brother, who's this super genius, and I wrote my first two books, and he wrote me a letter, a card, which he's famous for writing funny cards. But he said, "Congratulations, the only man who's read or written more books than he's read." And at that point in my life, was true. I hated reading. Yeah. All my life, I hated it. My dad was a writer. I don't know how many thousand books he had, just ridiculous, just so well read. Both my brothers read like crazy. I absolutely despised it. I would skim every article in the world. I'd read every article. I would read highlights of books, and I'd never finish one, right? Only what's pertinent to what I was doing.
Right.
Like, I didn't give a shit about a Western, you know, PMD.
Yeah.
I want to know about Eastern sulfurs. I don't give a shit about that. Okay, then I get here, okay, and everything I can, but I just would take what was pertinent. But I had never read a book cover to cover until I was 50. And something happened, I don't know what, and it was something about, I don't remember which one, it's Indian history. And I just became absolutely obsessed.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I have three books going right now. And I always do, I can't stop reading. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's a huge disappointment in myself that I didn't start earlier. I just did not give a shit. And to read that kind of book, like I just, someone else's stories about fishing, are you shitting me?
Right.
That sounds like having my fingernails put bamboo shoots under, until I did. But I, you know, like I said, even with Jerry's books, I could only read a little bit. And then I wanted just something that would teach me, like you said, I can tell you virtually every article in every fishing magazine that's ever been written. Mm-hmm. I have I have cases and cases of magazines, because that was my attention span.
Right.
It would be like three pages in a magazine or five pages in a book. And that was it. And then I have no idea why it should. But one of the things that really bothers me is that we don't have books, that we don't. It's just tragic. When I've told that story in here about when I wrote Modern Streamer, when I don't remember which, I think it was the first one. And no, it was Cripples and Spinners. And John Randolph, the editor of Fly Fisherman, told me to make ebooks because books were history. And I said, how do you smell it? Because even then I understood the value of smelling that book.
Yeah.
Why? Or a 78 special edition Fly Fisherman.
I put it up, I can still smell it.
Just because it's my favorite issue ever. And it's like, you know, it was like, it's cool, but I would love to see a renaissance in book. And I really think with more AI, I told Johnny this, covet every old book you can get that is before AI was invented.
Yeah.
Because people are going to be so fucking sick of this bullshit computer stuff that sounds great, it's written well, great, it sounds like Hemingway, but it's not. And I heard a great quote about that. I think it's in Dave's book that, I forget what decade he was talking about, but he said, there's a point in American literature where you either wrote like Hemingway or not, or the exact opposite, because everything was Hemingway in it. And I can't stand his books.
Yeah, I struggle with
them. Like, I've tried.
The short, choppy style.
I don't like, but this whole AI thing, I mean, there's going to be a point where we will just desire to read a human being's thoughts as opposed to
computer generated,
which sounds just like Hemingway or whomever it is that Harrison, whoever you love.
Yeah.
But maybe it's got a mistake in it. Wouldn't that be cool?
Do you remember when we were on our long road trip to the hunt for the 30 and I'd just come back from Alaska and I was reading a Hemingway book?
Yeah.
You're like, what are you doing? You read now? I'm like, well, Historically, I was like Kelly. Throughout all school, I don't think I ever read a book that I didn't. You know, I cheated my way through everything with Spark Notes and all that. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the attention span to read. If I wasn't interested in it, I like physically could not bring myself to do it. I'd read one sentence and then my mind is somewhere else. Then I discovered whodunits, like the Jack Reacher series, Joe Pickett, Walt Longmire. And those books grab my attention. They're, you know, mystery, murder, all that stuff. And then I decided I wanted to become a learned individual. So I picked up a Hemingway book. And I remember making it halfway through and Kelly picks me up from the airport. What are you doing? I'm like, I'm reading the shittiest book I've ever read in my life. And it's, what's the name of it? It's the Hemingway book where he's over in Spain, you know, the bullfight.
Oh, yeah, tripping on ass.
Yeah, but at the end of it, I absolutely loved it. It makes sense to me. But in the middle of it, I'm going, this is the worst author I've ever read. His short, choppy style pisses me off. It's the punctuation's terrible, but it's kind of what you're getting at, right? It's real.
Yes.
No, not all.
Long sentences, commas. It's proper. But as Jerry Dennis said to me once when he was editing my first book or second book, I don't know what it was, third, one of them, he goes, you use more commas than Hemingway, and you ain't no Hemingway.
I remember I bought
thank you, Jerry.
My dad Modern Streamers 2 when I started working out here. It's like a, you know, coffee table things. He loves fish and stuff and all that. And I said, read it. You'll learn something. And he made it like 30 pages in. He goes, I think Kelly's a better angler than he is an author, but there is a lot of information in there.
A lot of run-ons.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like this.
Yep.
A lot of run-ons.
All right, let's do Band of the Week. Did you fail to prepare again?
Yeah, I didn't really think about that this week.
I got a new one. I just found out about him today, and I can't believe I never heard of him. Do you know who Snowy White is?
Oh, absolutely.
I can't believe I never heard Snowy White before. We played in the shop all day. Some of my favorite guitar I've ever heard. It turns out he's been a part of a bunch of other bands I know. But
made me think of somebody else. Charles Musselwhite. He's a blues harp guy.
Well,
I liked him.
There it is.
What am I pissed off about?
Oh, are we doing that?
Good dogs die young. We lost one of our dogs.
The dogs die young.
We buried Dudley today.
I'm going to throw a couple drag. Photos of...
What a drag.
The drag. I'll throw some photos in a Dudley.
Hit good us all dogs die hard. Young and the guilty get off free.
Miss you, Duds. I hope there's a lot
you're
of
the great
knee,
dog.
There, I wish there's a. I hope there's a lot dog. Of knees up in heaven that he can bite them all.
Oh, that's right. I was telling somebody. Mr. Brady's gonna say he liked him. I said he hated him. He's always biting him.
No, I love Dudley. He did bite me a shitload, but I love Dudley.
He didn't bite you. Never bled.
No.
It's a cow dog.
It was a thump.
It's a cow dog.
It's a thump.
Just getting you in line.
Like you remember when we were all throwing the football? We'll wrap this up eventually. You remember when we were throwing the football out in the ghetto over here? And I pump faked and he just chomped me on the leg. And you look at me and you go, you dense motherfucker. What do you think he's going to do to a cow if it pump fakes? I'm like, I'm not a cow.
You know.
Point taken. I got it.
Cows are smarter. Thank you. Hope you liked it.